A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomized Studios.
Austin Butler is a winner. He beats me at cards, knows how to cook a wild salmon on the grill. And when we had a dinner every Sunday night for a year when he was filming in London, he always arrived with a new book he was reading, a piece of pottery he just made, or a rare bottle of tequila. We first recorded this podcast in May 2021, but we wanted to play it for you again in case you hadn't heard it. It is one of my definite favorites, just like Austin. If you like listening to Ruthie's Table 4, would you please make sure to rate and review the podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. My favorite line in this conversation is when Austin Butler refers to his and my relationship as family. Austin arrived here from filming Baz Luhrmann's movie Elvis, playing Elvis himself. London was just out of COVID lockdown, and needing an immediate tradition, we decided to have dinner at my home every Sunday night with the same small group of friends. Austin would turn up early and cook with me. And this is what we did every Sunday for 39 weeks. Austin is a brilliant actor, a beautiful singer, a poet, and a true friend. And Austin is my family. So, Austin, you and I are here in the River Cafe to talk about food, our memories, travel, and a lot more. But maybe we should just start with Australia.
I was in Australia for a year and a half filming. I was making Elvis with Baz Luhrmann.
Did he have food on set? Did you sit down to meals?
Yeah, well, we did this thing. I'm realizing it's a very European sort of thing where you have these rolling lunches, which basically means you don't have a lunch break. You eat while you're filming. And I actually kind of like it because it keeps momentum of filming. And so while we were filming, a lot of times it was just, I was eating for, it was like gasoline. Hmm. You know, I was eating for energy.
I just gotta be making the most of this thing while I can.
And then when we wrapped, Baz and I were at his house, and there was a small group of us, and it was the night that we wrapped. It was the first time that he and I both sort of were able to go, we did it. You know, we've been working on this I've been attached for about 2.5 years at that point, maybe 3 years. He'd been doing this for longer, 5 or 8 years or something. And we danced until the sun came up.
The two of you.
Yeah, well, we had a little group there, but we just put on vinyl records and we just danced and we ate oysters and we just lived life. It was like this feeling of letting our hair down, and then the sun started to come up, and Baz looked out, and he lived across the street from the sea, and he said, "Should we go swim in the ocean right now?" And this is the night that we wrapped the film, and so we were like, "Yeah, let's do it." Mm-hmm. So we ran across the street, and we jumped in the ocean, and it's like 5 a.m. now, and we swam in the ocean, and so the sun's rising, and I was gonna not go that night as well, and I said, "Baz, I can't believe I was gonna go to sleep tonight." And he started singing "Nessa Dorma" to me, and he goes, "No sleep tonight, no sleep tonight." And he starts singing this opera, and I hadn't really heard that song, and he was telling me the story of the opera, and then he said, "I'll play it for you when we get back to the shore," and he went back to the shore, And I kind of took a second for myself in the ocean where it was just me. I just watched the sunrise, and I sort of processed all that we had done. And you don't know the final outcome of a film. You hope that you did everything you possibly could, and you gave every bit of your soul, but you don't know how it's going to be received. But at that moment, I just kind of processed all that we had, the work that we had done, and the joy and the love that we'd put into it. And I sort of had that moment. And then as I sort of slowly walked back to shore, I look at Baz, and he's holding a speaker above his head like John Cusack in Say Anything. And he's playing Nessa Dorma, the Pavarotti version. Wow. And it's blaring at like 5:30 in the morning now on the beaches of the Gold Coast. Mm-hmm. It was so magical and cinematic. And then we made breakfast.
What was that?
We looked in the refrigerator and we thought, okay, what can we make? Because he and I both had been working so hard. And there's this thing about filming where there's so many responsibilities that other people end up almost treating you like you're a child in many areas. They walk you to the bathroom. You know, if I say I'm going to go to the trailer, they walk me there to make sure I don't get lost. They treat you like you can't do anything. And they bring you your food. And so you're very spoiled in many ways. But there's something so relieving about that moment when you're finally able to do something for yourself. And so he and I, that was our moment. We opened the refrigerator and we saw that, okay, we got eggs, we got asparagus, we got some spinach there, we got some tomatoes, we got some Parmesan cheese. What can we do? And so we kind of just made this breakfast, and there's this loaf of bread. And so we cut off bits of this bread and we toasted it and just made this delicious meal. And that's one of the most glorious memories of my life, was like after we finished this thing that was so terrifying and daunting, and that we gave it everything we could. And then we just sat there, and as the morning sun sort of laid down on us, and ate that breakfast, and it was so glorious.
It's about memory, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. about the time. And what about Tarantino?
Oh, did
he,
God,
was
amazing.
He interested in food?
Yeah, yeah.
Does he like food?
Remember one night we were doing night shoots, and it was about 3 in the morning. He had this amazing crepe maker come and make crepes. And we were eating these amazing crepes, and he said, Austin, you know, my thing is, I want to give everybody such a good experience on this job that their next job sucks. And it was such a wonderful thing. So every night there would be some new food thing that he would organize. So you just had this thing to look forward to. And the other thing that he did was, after every 100 rolls of film, which, believe it or not, this was the first time I had shot anything on film, because everything since I grew up was on digital, essentially, with every person that I'd worked with. And so that was really special, just hearing the sound of the film going through the camera when you're sitting in the car. But every 100 rolls of film, you'd throw a party, and it would have a theme. So you'd have, you know, Grappa would come out, and so everybody, and they'd be singing these songs, or Margaritas would come out, and he'd have a mariachi band, so every 100 rolls, whether it be 10 in the morning or, you know, 3 in the morning, it was something to look forward to.
I think that does actually give people a kind of commitment to the person you're working for.
Yeah.
You know that they're taking care of, you know, they're thinking about you, recognizing that you're working hard and that you want to give them something back. It means a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When you lived by yourself, you once told me that you chose a house in Los Angeles because it had a pizza oven.
Oh, that was great.
What was that like?
Yeah. There's this beautiful house that had belonged to Gary Oldman before, and he had built a pizza oven. And I became obsessed with learning how to make the perfect fire in this pizza oven, the specific type of wood and exactly how to lay it. And I got one of those laser temperature gauges so I could make it 1,000 degrees and learned how to make the pizza sauce and the dough and everything. And it was actually Christmas that I made the most pizzas, I think. And the first couple kind of came out rough, and then started to get really into the zone of it. And it was amazing to me how fast you could cook a pizza.
Yeah, in that heat.
Heat, 30 seconds or 45 seconds, and you could cook a whole pizza. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I cooked pizzas for my whole family, and it was such a great experience just getting to feed them, and the special thing of all kind of being around the fire, and we had this table out there, and it sort of looked like this secret garden as well in this backyard, and cooked all these pizzas, and then I started getting into other things. I thought, what else can I cook in this fire? And there's a restaurant in L.A. called Pache that is in Laurel Canyon that makes this salmon on a cedar plank. And so I thought, I want to learn how to make that. So I ended up getting these cedar planks and soaking them in water and putting the salmon on top and seasoning it and sticking it in the wood fire.
Did you put it in the wood oven?
It came out so incredibly.
This is something solitary. Like when I talked to Michael Caine, he said that he'd love to write a book.
Yeah.
He liked to garden and he liked to cook because doing a movie, you are surrounded by hundreds of people. You're surrounded, whatever you're doing, you just described being walked to the bathroom or trying to find your trail. There's always someone around. And then he chose three solitary things that you can do on your own.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like maybe that cooking was something that you could do without
absolutely.
A group,
it makes you feel self-sufficient.
And yeah. And also giving back to the people that you want to feed.
Absolutely.
Well.
It becomes my love language in a way. I cook so much for the people around me. I'll look into their eyes when they're eating it and try to see if they love it as much as they say they do. And I'll try to figure out ways of making it better. And
it sounds, the way you're talking about it, like a performance.
Yeah.
You know, do you think there are parallels between acting or performing or singing and cooking, looking into people's eyes and seeing how they are responding to your performance?
Absolutely.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Grilled white peaches with amaretto. Serve 6. 6 ripe white peaches, 1 vanilla pod, 2 tablespoons caster sugar, 120 milliliters amaretto. Preheat oven to 190 degrees Celsius. Heat a grill pan until very hot. Cut each peach in half and remove the stone. Place the peach halves, cut side down, on the hot pan and grill until slightly charred. Remove from the pan and place face up on an oven-proof dish. Slice the vanilla pod lengthways and put, with the sugar, into a mortar. Pound until the vanilla pod is broken up and combined with the sugar. Scatter the vanilla sugar over the peaches and pour over half of the amaretto. Bake for 10 minutes or until the peaches are soft. Add the remaining amaretto and serve, hot or cold, with a spoonful of creme fraiche.
Thank you.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. Austin, amaretto, an Italian liqueur, peaches, grilled. Is that anything to do with any food you grew up with in California?
Yeah, so I was born in Anaheim, right near Disneyland, And we used to have these, we used to have trees in the backyard that it wasn't, we didn't have peaches, but we had grapefruit trees and we had an orange tree in the backyard. And so like the smell of fresh fruit, I remember my mom picking it and us having this fresh fruit in the kitchen and these lemons and grapefruit. And so that's sort of what that made me think of.
Did your mom, was she a good cook?
She was a great cook, and especially as the years went on, I remember eating a lot of fish sticks and, you know, things that you'd get in the freezer aisle, and little corn dogs that she would make, because when I was born, she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, and she was a dental hygienist at the time, and then she ended up starting daycare out of the house, and so she would watch the children of the mothers who taught at the school right around the corner that I eventually went to elementary school there. And so so we always had little children in the house, and so she had to make these meals that were really quick and easy. So as a kid, I just remember eating those and tuna fish sandwiches and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and so nothing really gourmet at all. And then as the years went on, she became vegetarian, and then she became vegan, and then she got really into making special things with portobello mushrooms and bell peppers stuffed with couscous or things like that. So she got a little bit more into it later on. But when I was growing up, it wasn't extremely healthy in the house. It was kind of efficient meals.
And but she's probably working so hard.
She was working so much. And there was 12 kids in the house sometimes, and all different ages. And when I was when I started going to elementary school, we lived around the corner from that same school, and I would walk home every lunch, and she'd have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich waiting for me. and we'd watch this home decorating show called Surprise by Design.
Okay.
And then we'd come up with things that we were going to do around the house, and so we'd lay a brick path in the backyard or plant little flowers or that sort of thing. We'd get inspired by this show. And I just remember how excited I was to walk home every day and just eat the sandwich that she made for me and how special that was.
That's a beautiful memory, isn't it, of your mother making something for you and going home for lunch.
Yeah.
You know, that's. Would you have dinner as well? Would you all sit down to dinner, or was that more?
Well, my parents divorced when I was 7, and a lot of my memories go back to that time because it was when sort of the stability of family split up. And my dad moved into this person that he worked with. He moved into their garage, and they had sort of a converted garage, and we had a tiny little miniature fridge, and that was where we kept all our groceries, and we had air mattresses that we slept on, and we'd put them down at night, and then we'd put them up, and we'd put down a table during the day. And so it was this one room that was our entire house. And it was just this old garage, and there was a treadmill in the corner that was their old treadmill, and we would make food there, and so we shared their kitchen, but other than that, we had sort of just this one room. And I started cooking as a kid because with my dad he had work, and so he would say, "Hey, I'll pay you $2 if you cook dinner tonight." And so as a way that I could stock up money as a kid was cooking dinner. And there was like three staple things maybe, and one of the main ones that I remember is burritos. We'd make Denison's chili bean burritos, which is this can of beans with some sour cream and cheese. And I haven't eaten one of those in years, but we used to eat that every night. And then a special occasion would be getting a $5 pizza from down the road or something like that. So that was like the idea of a fancy meal was ordering a pizza out when I was a kid. Which I think then years later, coming to a place like your restaurant here, or going to French Laundry for the first time or something like that I felt so out of my element in a way when I first started going to really nice restaurants, because, you know, $5 sounded like a lot for a meal when I was a kid.
Would you do the shopping, or would he order out?
We'd usually go to Costco when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, we'd get food in bulk and then and make meals out of that. And then at a certain point, I think when I moved out when I was 17, and I started wanting to learn how to make food and wanting to know how flavors fit together. And I started making some money. And so I started trying restaurants in LA and then I worked in New York for the first time. And that was really eye opening because getting to try great little Italian restaurants. And I remember going to Roberta's for the first time, which is this restaurant in Brooklyn that a friend of mine who owned all these restaurants in LA, he said, this is the restaurant that made me want to open a restaurant. Mm. And so going to Roberta's and trying there. And it feels a lot like here where you feel like you're home. You know, you enter and I realize I have a lot of instability in my life. There hasn't been a lot of continuity. Mm. In many areas of my life since I was young, just because I travel a lot and even the nature of doing a film or a TV show, you sort of make a family of the entire crew and then it splits up. And through therapy, I sort of realized that I was almost like reliving my childhood of my parents getting divorced for, you know, many years of making a family and then it splits up and you make a family and it splits up. And so I'd seek out ways of having stability and consistency. And most of that for me while on location, whether I was in Vancouver or New Zealand or Australia or here in London or wherever I was, I would find restaurants that became my second home. Mm-hmm. And I'd get to the point where I'd go there every day and the staff then knew me and I knew them. And suddenly it felt like there was this thing that was separate from my work that felt like home.
Yeah.
Even if I've woken up with anxiety or if I feel sad or I feel overwhelmed, I go to a restaurant. And I think what you've created here is so beautiful because I feel it here as well. I'll come here with a book and, you know, and I get to see you and I get to read and I know the people who work here. And that goes even deeper because you and I have a family relationship beyond that.
I think I always say that in an irregular world, we do need regular things.
Yeah.
And I think even if we have, you know, your life, you know, the way you describe it is very moving and very honest and a revelation of who you are. But I think that even if you have a consistency and you have those foundations and you have that life, it's still... We seek out, you know, you talk to people about the Sunday lunch, people going home for Sunday lunch or Friday night supper or Christmas. The Christmas lunch has to be the same every year. And so food does mean that, doesn't it? It gives
it
you
does.
A sense of stability. And I always wanted a restaurant to feel like home. You know, that is a place. I'm always amazed that people will come to a restaurant even if they've had a really bad day, you know, or something bad has happened.
Sometimes we need it on those days the most.
Yeah, that you come.
This morning I could hardly leave the house. I just felt anxious for some reason.
Yeah.
And then I just said, you know, I just got to get to the cafe.
Yeah.
And once you get there, then suddenly there's life around you and it sort of buzzes and you feel humanity wash over you. And, and things that are happening outside of your own experience. And then you eat delicious food and that really helps.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
Did you eat pizzas in Italy when you went on that trip? You tell me that you took a road trip.
Yeah, I ate a lot of pizza there.
Where did you start?
So we took this, one of the best trips I've ever taken was this, I spent a month just road tripping through Italy.
What year was
and
that?
That was probably four years ago or something like that. It was before Elvis. Mm. And we started in Milan, drove from Milan to the coast and went to Portofino first, and I'd only ever spent maybe a week in Italy before this, and that was incredible. And then drove down and went to Cinque Terre and hiked between the little villages and went through the vineyards.
Did you
there
have pesto?
Had pesto.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the best pesto pasta.
Yeah.
Besides yours.
They can make a better one than mine. I'm not competitive.
No, it was incredible. Yeah. And then drove down through Tuscany, drove through Florence. And did that for a couple of days and drove out to this little bed and breakfast in Tuscany. It was run by this beautiful Italian woman and her husband, and they had two daughters, and one of the daughters would play piano in the afternoon and you'd hear it reverberating through the vineyard, and so it was just us and this family. And she'd bring focaccia up and you'd eat it around the pool in the afternoon, and then at night her husband would one night he caught a wild boar, and so then she made this wild boar, and it was just absolutely divine. And one of their daughters was dating a young man who was 18 years old, that he was half Israeli and half Italian. And he told me, he said, "You know, I'm a pilot." And I said, "Oh, you're a pilot? That's fantastic." And he said, "You know, I can fly you if you want me to." And I said, "Wow, that would be cool, but I thought I'm not trusting our lives in this 18-year-old kid's hands, you know." And then the next night, his mom came to dinner. She was in the Israeli Air Force. And she said, "You know, he's actually a very good pilot." And I said, "Mom, you know what? You only live once. I mean, where could we go?" And he said, "You know, I can fly you to Elba." It's where, and I thought, well, that's where Napoleon was exiled. Yeah, sure. And you could go to that little island, and that would be really cool. And I said, "You know what? Let's do it. I'll pay for gas. I'll pay for the plane, whatever we need." And so we end up getting in the car, and he couldn't drive a car.
But he could fly a plane.
And so I drive us all. It's me and my girlfriend at the time and him and his girlfriend. And we drive up to Florence, and we end up getting to the little separate private area of the airport. And we go through security, and then he ends up going to a little garage and by hand pulling out a little four-seater Cessna.
Oh,
so you picture this skinny little Italian. Oh, my gosh. He pulls this thing out by hand. I'm thinking, oh, my God, what are we doing here? It felt like riding in a go-kart or something. And we get into the plane and go through all the pre-flight checks, and then we take off. And then I can't hear him at all. It's static in the headphones. And I see panic over his face. And we're in the air now. And we're flying. And I'm thinking, he's the only person that can land this plane. And there's panic on his face. And I can't hear him. And it's static. And then I realized that he just couldn't figure out how to switch a certain switch. And so we couldn't hear each other. And once he figured that out, then peace came upon the airplane. And then he told me, "You know, it's a very dangerous landing place in Elba because you have to fly in this zigzag shape." And so that's then I'm going, "Oh, God, we're trusting this 18-year-old. And we end up zigzagging through the mountains of Elba and landing. And we got there safely, thankfully.
Clearly.
And then we ate pasta with him and his girlfriend that day for lunch, and they flew back. And we stayed and rode around on Vespas and ate pasta at all these different beaches on Elba and went to the vineyards that Napoleon used to go to. And then he came back 3 days later and picked us up on the plane, and we flew back to Florence. And that was, it was magic.
So the adventure of travel, the adventure of eating.
It's like over dinner you create these adventures,
Yeah. the culture of a country is so taken through its food. And very often, as I, you know, we meet somebody who comes back from a country and we don't ask what museum they went to or, you know, what gallery they saw, what church. Well, we do. But, you know, this also tells you so much by them saying, as you've just described, the food that they ate and the culture of the dinners or the shooting a boar or catching a fish. Or it's as exciting as getting on a plane, crazily, I might say, by somebody you don't know. You know, it's all about curiosity and exploring and opening ourselves up. And so if we think about, you know, we've talked about food as memory, the food that you've had on sets and traveling and working, and the food that connects us all, I suppose. It connects our memories, it connects each other, is a sense of excitement, but it's also a sense of comfort. What would be the food you would probably go to for comfort?
I've been away from home for a long time, and as well as the fact that my mother's no longer here. She passed away when I was 23. And I almost hadn't put it into conscious thought, but I often will, after a big week or if I'm feeling really overwhelmed, I'll make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and that becomes my thing. I made one the other day. And it's just that comforting sensation. So that's one of my go-to comfort foods for sure.
I'll see you for cards on Sunday night.
I'll see you for
my
cards.
Dice partner.
Yeah. I'll see you then.
Thank you.
To visit the online shop of the River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.